What about your week? How's that been?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Oh, I can't even remember what I've done, mate, to be honest. It's just work, isn't it, really?
Yeah, there was a light
Looking
moment actually
forward.
today. I went I had to go out and get some recordings. I was near the one that's near above Bath Street. I want something place. I don't know. Anyway, I was walking along the street. I recognised a face, and Franny Benali walked past and stopped and said hi, and managed to get a little interview with him, which was it was
Oh,
chill.
nice.
See little Franny just walking around town. It's the first time I've ever met him. Lovely
Were
guy.
you out on your own, were
Yeah, I was out on my own just getting some recordings for work, but
What do you
because we're doing
mean?
stuff.
So what
Well,
recording what?
well, obviously, World Cup kicked off on Sunday in England against Iran's on Monday, so they just wanted some sort of like England fans around the city, just what their thoughts were ahead of the game. And
Oh,
yeah,
lo and behold, you bump into
Franny Benali.
my man. He's a good bloke, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a good talker as well. I'm more than happy to stop by. Really nice guy. Really nice guy.
Yeah.
Bedford Place, that's the one. That's the
Perfect.
name of the place. But yeah, I thought of all the people to be wandering around. I mean, well, of all the people, Franny Benali in Southampton, I guess, is not that unlikely. But
I do wonder what Franny Benali was doing up Bedford Place on a Thursday afternoon.
yeah.
Bedford Place, notoriously student hangout, up there for a few beers, was
Yeah,
he? How was the
he's.
tash looking? How was his Movember tash coming along?
The Tash was looking strong, to be fair, but he's fairly grizzly all over, so it didn't stand out as much as if it was just if he'd shaved everything but the Tash. But I mean, it's a good Movember effort, that's for sure.
Synonymous. A man synonymous with the tash,
Exactly,
Franny.
he's naked without it.
But no, he's a top bloke. Met him a couple of times in the media, sweet as St Mary's, and he's one of those that's always got time for people and is happy to have a
Yeah.
chat. And even if he doesn't know who you are, he'll always sort of smile and say hello as he goes past you. So, yeah,
I
top
don't think
bloke.
I even said my name to him. It was just more of a case of I had the microphone and he was walking past and I was just like, all right. And he sort of just like, yeah, mate, not too bad. And they just stopped and I was like, well, I've got a microphone, so I might as well grab a word. I didn't even ask him. I didn't even ask him if he was okay with an interview. But he rattled off straight
He could
away.
see you with BBC in that, right? So,
Yeah.
yeah, no, fair enough. What did he have to say on
You know what?
the World Cup? Or
Today
did
has
you get
been
anything about
so
Saints out of
busy.
him?
Today has been so busy that I haven't got a clue what that man said. I would, I he said that his daughter Kenzie's going out to Qatar. That bit I do remember because that was right at the very end. In terms of England, I think it's probably fairly sure of playing against Iran. Hope we do well. Hope we go through. Then see how we do from there, really.
Fair enough. Didn't speak to him about Saints and the new manager, which is what
No,
this podcast will eventually be about.
I didn't. But it was mainly on the World Cup. But of course, we might. It's a nice little segue there, I suppose. My lack of asking that means that you can listen. Our listeners can hear your opinion and my opinion on the new man at Saints, Nathan Jones. So I guess without further ado, my name's Tom Murray.
My name's Callum Wilson, and this is Under the Lights.
Callum, Nathan Jones. I'm sure that when Ralph Hasenhüttl was sacked, that was the first name that came to your head of thinking, that's who I want to replace him.
Classic Saints, isn't it, Tom? Every time there's either a player or a manager or something, and this has been going around for the best part of a year, who would you bring in? Even the people who wanted Ralph in would say, yeah, well, who's out there? Those who wanted Ralph out would come up with answers. I've seen managers that I've never heard of from all over the globe, but not on any occasion did I ever hear the name Nathan Jones until I saw he was 7-4 on. Odds on favourite with the bookies, and within the space of a couple of days, it seemed to be all done.
Yeah. Now, I never in my wildest dreams even thought that we'd be getting the likes of Pochettino to come back. I think that was more of a pipe dream than anything. It was the connection to Saints where you just thought, okay, maybe something there. But you saw the other names that were linked, and you just thought, I don't know. It's just Nathan Jones just slowly made his way up the odds list, and
Oh, quite
it's
quickly, I think. He
well,
wasn't.
yeah.
I never saw him on the odds list, or never saw his name even mentioned until not too long after the confirmation that Ralph had gone, and all of a sudden he was out there on his own. He certainly wouldn't have been many people's first choice. I don't think he was even in people's minds because, of course, he had a club with Luton. He was on a long contract, which Saints have had to pay a fair amount to get him out of. So the fact that they've spent that much money to get him out and not just go for someone on a free suggests that that's the man that they really want. But I just wonder, if they've spent that much to get him out of there, then surely it wouldn't have cost too much more to get someone out of a more established club, maybe a Premier League club, maybe a Thomas Frank or a Silver at Fulham or someone like that. So it just says to me that the club have got the man that they wanted. And I just wonder if he was first choice, because it feels to me like Carson Hussle could have gone a while ago, could have gone certainly at different times this season after the Everton game was probably the obvious point after a few poor losses. But they seem to stick with it despite unrest amongst the fan base and poor results. And now Saints have seen 19th in the Premier League. I just wonder if, because it seemed like they were putting it off because they knew who their top target was, but they couldn't get him yet. Whereas that doesn't fit the bill with Nathan Jones. I'm unsure of what took them so long. I thought it was more to do with the person they wanted to bring in rather than giving Ralph the chance, or another chance, as it were.
Yeah, it's a strange one because I mean, not just the season, as you mentioned, there's been numerous times where Ralph could have gone, could have been sacked, and they're thinking that a possible sort of amicable separation would have been at the end of last season when you've got the whole summer to go through. But then, the new owners put in backing Saints in the transfer market, and then you're thinking, okay, Ralph now has a summer where he is going to get financially backed. And to me, it just seems, it seems so much. I know it seems so much a risk. And in the
Yeah.
Premier League, the Premier League is not a league where you can be making risks at the wrong end of the table. Sure, if you're sat in eighth place and you're not going to get relegated and the chances of getting into European football are very slim to none, then yeah, you can start putting those risks of playing the 18-year-old forward in the academy to try and see if they can get up to speed. But you don't do it when you're 19th in the table with a group of players who are barely over 20, most of them, and those new signings, a young team. I know that makes them quite malleable in terms of like learning, but it just you're hoping so much that it's going to all come together in one place, and that very rarely happens in football.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. I think that's the obvious one. It's a risky appointment. It's a ballsy appointment. It's not very often a manager is taken from the Championship to come into the Premier League. Graham Potter is one at Brighton that comes to mind. But generally, the ones that are in the Premier League now or have got there on merit by winning promotion. The likes of Eddie Howe, the likes of Cooper and Frank and Silver now. It's whether it's a good thing or not, I think it's good for football. I think Nathan Jones has obviously done a terrific job at Luton, and he's earned the opportunity to try and replicate what he's done on a bigger stage. The fact that he hasn't done it before suggests that there's a big risk for Saints, because it's not at the beginning of a season. It's not mid-season when, like you said, they're safe from not going down. There's nothing really to play for. Saints are in the relegation zone, and Nathan Jones is the man that's been tasked to get them out of it. Now, it is risky. The other thing I'll touch on that you just said is it's risky because we have a young squad, but that is the bet that the board have made. That is the plan. That's the strategy. We're bringing in top youngsters, trying to develop them, and then sell them on. And I think that's the main reason they've brought in Nathan Jones, because what he does have is a track record of getting the most out of young players. Luton didn't have any money. I think they had the 23rd biggest budget, so second smallest budget in the championship, got into the playoffs last year and looked like they were on the way to doing the same again this year. So he's done brilliantly in that division with no budget, with young players, and with one of the weaker squads in the division. Now what they're asking him to do essentially is the same thing, but a league above, quite literally. And it is risky because the Premier League is a different animal. And he would have found out that against Liverpool. Let's talk about the Liverpool game, and then we'll go into what we've seen from Nathan Jones as a person. But what did you make of the Liverpool game? What did you make of the players' performances? And our first glimpse of maybe not a complete Nathan Jones side, but one that was at least inspired by them and led by them on the touchline, because he definitely didn't leave the touchline at any stage.
No, I really. In the first half, when it was at 1-1, I was really excited by what I was seeing. You know, the players look bang up for it. They seem to have a general idea about what they were doing there. We had players getting into the box. It was just the final ball that was evading them at times. Really good character from Saints to after going 1-0 down in such a sloppy way. It was one of those goals where you're just not quite sure how it's actually gone in. I like Bazunu. I think he's good. But that was definitely one of his poorer moments, letting that sort of header go in. Then to get it 1-1 very quickly, great header from Shea Adams, the first decent ball that James Ward-Prowse has put into the box in quite a long time.
A great header. It was half head, half shoulder. That's typical with Shea, but certainly did the job.
Yeah, did the job. And then Saints sort of tried to take the game to Liverpool until Liverpool made it 2-1 and 3-1, I thought far too easy, but that's something that Saints are not going to be able, Nathan Jones won't be able to change that overnight. At that point, really, the game was really done. I didn't expect anything, but then they put in a decent second half performance, you know, 0-0. And aside from Alisson, you know, if it weren't for Alisson having one of his better games, he usually has quite a lot of good games, but he had a very good game. Made some really good saves. I think possibly if Saints had got one back earlier in the half, you never know what would have happened. They didn't. But they created a couple of good chances, some nice cameos, especially from Edozie. I thought he linked up well with Shea Adams at the top. I went into the game with zero expectation. I like what I saw. We didn't get hammered, really. I mean, Liverpool never really looked out of control of the game, even when we started dominating in the second half. But at that point, I thought, I did think in the first half, especially when we went when it was 3-1, that we were far too, like, Liverpool just had complete control of the game for the rest of that first half after they went 3-1. And we really struggled to get the ball. There wasn't a huge amount of pressing. And if it was maybe one person at a time. It was far too easy. I mean, Liverpool are one of the best sides in not just the league, in the world, despite their poor form. When they turn it on, they can be phenomenal. And unfortunately, we played them in a game where they sort of had their mojo.
Yeah, no, I agree with much of what you said. I think you're right that I think the first 10 minutes, first 10, 15 minutes, we actually looked really good. I could see that they'd been sent out with a message. From the off, we were pressing them high. Much of the first 10, 15 minutes was played actually in Liverpool's half, which was great. Whether we had the ball or not, it was played in their half and we were winning throw-ins high up the pitch. We were winning the ball back. We were putting the ball in the box, players in the box, and we looked good. And it was quite refreshing to see. And then the goal came at the wrong time. It was against the run of play, really. I think you could argue it was a header from nowhere. Bazunu obviously took that step to his left. And really, agility isn't one of the things I would usually criticise him on. But he should have got across quicker. And then when he did, the ball sort of went under his hand. So he has to take the blame for that goal. There's no way you can blame the defence because Firmino is facing away from his goal almost at the edge of the box and has headed it backwards. I mean, for a defender to allow that, I don't think is the worst thing in the world. We returned it with a dead ball situation of our own, a brilliant set piece from James Ward-Prowse, which this season maybe the quality's been lacking there a little bit, but into Che Adams, and as you said, a great header. And I felt like we'd earned that, at least. We should have been level. We shouldn't have gone behind. But what's interesting is you said that the press, maybe in both halves, kind of dwindled a bit. It was almost like when they still had the words of Nathan Jones ringing in their ear, they'd gone out and they were pressing. It's just about instilling that in the players on the pitch because we do lack leaders, because we lack experience. So it's about players not just needing that instruction because although he's bellowing from the sidelines, it can't all be on the manager. He needs to be able to put responsibility on those players and the likes of James Ward-Prowse and maybe Chileta Sarr, some of the more experienced players, Che Adams, they need to make sure that that doesn't dwindle and we keep doing that because they've got the fitness and we've seen them do it before under Ralph. Second half, yeah, same thing happened in the second half. I was disappointed with the second and third goal and I thought Bela Kotchup especially looked poor, had a poor game. Struggled with Nunez. And we've mentioned it before on this podcast, but for all of his pluses and his strengths, Bela Kotchup, he is one of those players that plays, I think he plays a little bit kind of like Van Dijk, where he does it in cruise control, whereas he's not at that level and he needs to maintain focus. And we played with such a high line, I think a lot of the time, the likes of him and Salisu have got the pace to make up for the fact that they've switched off and just get back in time. Did it against, I think it was Salah, came through on the right-hand side, completely switched off, managed in the end to sort of come, it might have been Nunez actually, came around him, could have given away a penalty, but managed to get a toe to the ball after he'd switched off. And we did it too many times. We played with three at the back, high line, which is not a problem when you have pace. But you need to be able to read the game better. And both the goals really came from that. Bazunu made a good save from Salah as well. So 3-1 at half time, I don't think flattered them because we did give away those chances. And it was kind of Nathan Jones' side looks like it's got the nucleus of the right things and the right mentality and an identity there. But then the same old problem with the defence come a cropper. And he's got 6 weeks now to go through with players. I know some of them are at the World Cup, but certainly with a decent group of them, trying to instill those ideas and those intricacies of playing that kind of way. What I really liked is that, and what we've been lacking for a long time, is that he changed the game with substitutions and with tactical changes. And I know we were 3-1 down, and the emphasis and the onus was on us, but he brought on Edozie and Walcott. Put the pace out wide, took off Chileta Sarr, played a 4-2-3-1. And from that point on, we were the better side. And I think Elyounoussi and Edozie both had chances, quick succession. Edozie changed the game for me. He looked really good. A little 1-2 where Alisson made a second of three good saves. And then, of course, Che Adams with that header down low and a really good save once again from Alisson. So on another day, against maybe not the best goalkeeper potentially in the world, Saints might have got something from that game. But I saw enough to be refreshed by that Saints team and that manager. And after having 6 weeks with the players, he will install his beliefs, his values, and his identity on the squad. And we've got a run of fixtures after the World Cup and after Christmas, where there's a good opportunity for us not just to get out of the relegation zone, but to really put a decent run together.
Yeah, I'm just got the fixtures in front of me now. So, Boxing Day when we come back. Well, I mean, we've got Lincoln City before that, but in the Premier League, Brighton at home. That's a difficult game. But Fulham away follows that. Then a massive game on Wednesday, the 4th of January, at home to Nottingham Forest. Then it's Everton away, Villa at home, and then you've got Brentford and Wolves in the early weeks of February, which it's a massive run and. It puts a lot of pressure on Nathan Jones to get it right straight away because you just feel if Southampton don't have a good run in those fixtures, that it could really be curtains before they even get to April and May. I mean, just running through the fixtures after that, Chelsea away.
There's bound to be a point where if we're missing all the big six or seven, if you include Newcastle at the moment in that run, then there's bound to be a period where you're playing a few of them consecutively, aren't you?
Well, yeah, I'm just here. After that run of after Wolves, Chelsea away, Leeds away, Leicester at home, Manchester United away, Tottenham at home, West Ham away, Manchester City at home, and then after a game against Crystal Palace, it's Arsenal. With, you know, and the final game of the season as well, home to Liverpool. So
yeah, got to get points early. Pressure on Nathan Jones to do it.
Yeah, and then one point I want to make, Callum, is I think Saints could have brought anybody in, but let's face it, if in January they do not buy a competent striker, then no manager is going to make a difference. You can't rely on Shea Adams to consistently get you goals. You certainly can't rely on any of the other strikers. Mara hasn't done a thing apart from that one assist against Leeds. Adam Armstrong, he's been developed more as a winger at the moment, but he's not adding to the goals. It is basically Shea Adams at the moment, and he's not consistent enough, and he doesn't put the number of chances he's missed in recent weeks is I know it's you can't blame him all the time, but if all the chances are falling to him and he's not putting them away, then we need someone who can consistently hit the back of the net.
Yeah, and this isn't a new problem for Saints. Ever since Danny Ings left, we've not had that talisman. Last season, we're aware that the goals that James Ward-Prowse got, especially from direct free kicks, which was a bit of a phenomena, really. Those and the importance of those goals. I mean, I don't have the stats in front of me, but the amount of points that gained us last season made all the difference. This season, he's not getting those goals. So we haven't got that secondary point. I believe Roman Pero might even be our second top goal scorer.
Roman Pero, since is a stat I actually put out on Twitter, since Roman Pero got his first Saints goal with that fantastic strike against West Ham, he is the second highest scorer in that time with just three goals.
He did go on a good run, though, and that West Ham game was only about a month ago, so that's
no,
not...
I mean, since his first... since March, where he scored in the FA Cup.
Oh, right, sorry, I
he
thought you meant since
in that
Ham,
whole time, okay. In that whole time, taking into account every player that has scored for Saints, he's second highest with three. Shea Adams and Ward-Prowse both have five in that time.
It's essentially since the poor run under Arsenal really started, which was sort of Feb March. Yeah, so I agree with you, a striker. I would be massively surprised if we didn't bring in a striker. I'm not sure who it's going to be.
Well, it won't be Gakpo, will it?
Yeah, he was the guy that we wanted. Obviously, we were linked with. That didn't happen. Leeds seemed to kind of be overtaking us in that respect. And then there was quite a lot of link with Man United. All I will say is I wonder if Man United are going to be in for them now that they ended up going with Antony, because, you know, he was Dutch. So it was clearly a Ten Hag idea. And when Antony seemed to be too expensive. And I just wonder, I think Gakpo could go to one of the top clubs in Europe. But the more I think about them, I wonder, yeah, who's he going to go to? You know, in the Premier League, I don't see him getting any minutes at Arsenal, especially ahead of the likes of Saka. You've got players like Rafinha, who's just gone to Barcelona. You know, I'm talking about that right side, left footer, that kind of player. Obviously, Antony, we've just mentioned. Potentially... Tottenham, with Son being out for a little bit, but then by the time the World Cup comes around, he'll be back in, and Kulusevski is that type of player. Who else is up there? I mean, Almiron's having an unbelievable season.
Yeah.
Exactly that type of player. Man City, so many forward attacking options. Liverpool have got Salah in there, and they've got Diaz to come back. Nunez is doing well. So, Premier League-wise, I'm not sure who of the top clubs would need that type of player. Maybe Chelsea. Havertz not really doing it. Ziyech not really getting any game time. Ziyech, by the way, is a player I've been wondering whether there's a loan move in him potentially till the end of the season. I imagine other Premier League clubs are doing better than Saints at the moment, might be able to nip in there. But
yeah, that's
maybe,
the problem. Yeah,
maybe a Hail Mary to say, look, we could take him and take him on to the end of the season. But yeah, I don't know enough about, you know, the Serie A, Juventus, Napoli, the Italia, the Milan clubs, and what, you know, probably won't go to Real Madrid, maybe Bayern. So, you know, then you're looking at a level below that. And if that's where he's going to go, then maybe clubs like Saints and Leeds might have a chance, but he's going to cost more than the kind of 30, 40 million that was touted earlier in the season. And with Saints where they are at the moment, I doubt Sport Republic are going to want to spend that amount of money. But it'll be interesting to see what they do, because new manager, we're in a relegation zone, we're 19th, we're below Nottingham Forest somehow, and you can't go through a transfer window without bringing anyone in. That's that, you know, Nathan Jones, I'm sure, will have had reassurances that he'll be able to bring in players, especially a striker. So January, hopefully, will be a good month, and they'll get the business done early, because as we've mentioned, our run of good fixtures is from the end of December and through January. So you want your players in ASAP to play in those games. What do you make of Nathan Jones then, finally, just as a person based on what we've heard? Because he seems animated. He seems really fired up and passionate about the job. He's got a link with the club that many people didn't know. He hates Pompey, which is great. I don't know if you've seen the link going around of him slagging off their fans, which is pretty funny. But he's saying a lot of the right things. And I think 99% of Saints fans heard it was Nathan Jones who went, oh, really? What are we doing? We're going down. You heard all sorts of stuff online. And then he spoke. And I would suggest after hearing him speak, that percentage changed quite vastly.
Yeah, he said all the right things so far. One of the quotes that I really liked was after the Liverpool game, where he said, we were far too passive. We will not be that passive again, which is something that we never really had from Ralph in his post-match interviews. It was more sort of just dejected, like, oh, we need to be better. But like in general, like, whereas Nathan Jones immediately picks out something specific about the game that he didn't like, a particular quality of it, that passiveness, picks it out and immediately calls out his players and says, you know, we're not going to be that passive again. So,
but there's a we, isn't there? It's we. Yeah. It's not my players were, which by the end of it became Ralph pretty much blaming his players. Whereas I know it's different because he'd had the life sucked out of him by those players by the time his 4 years kind of almost come about. And this is day one, no pressure on the first game with almost a pre-season now for Jones. So he's coming in and he's, you know, it's a blank canvas almost for him a little bit. So he's got ideas which he will implement. But I like, his confidence. And what he said about Che Adams as well, when I can't remember the exact quote, but the question was kind of about, you know, is there a striker in there that will be able to get some goals? You know, do you think you might be able to get that out of him? And he was like, I guarantee you I will. So, he's making guarantees. They're bold statements. Sometimes they come back to bite you in the ass, but it's refreshing to hear. And it gives you confidence in him because he keeps banging on about identity, which I think is probably the main thing. Mm. After being able to work with young players, he insists that we will have an identity, which is something that we lost completely under Ralph Hasen at all and wasn't consistent over those 4 years. So that, I personally think, is majorly important.
I think at the end of the day, it's a risk, but also a risk that could very well pay off. You may be underwhelmed by the name or his past experience, but I believe there's enough in there, and from what I've seen so far, to think that, you know, it's not going to be an abject failure. Obviously, it depends on the performance against Brighton on Boxing Day, when we come back, when he's had that sort of mini pre-season. I wouldn't say I'm confident. I'm more just looking forward to having a team.
Optimistic
about having a team that look like they are going to fight for the manager, and a manager who seems to be able to make tactical changes. I know it's only his first game, but to do it against Liverpool and take the game to them where it could have easily, they could have gone into like second, third gear and made it four or five, which I wouldn't have been surprised. If it was under Ralph, I wouldn't have been surprised if that game ended 6-1.
You know what? I thought this. Saints conceded inside 10 minutes away to Liverpool.
Yeah.
And it was quite nice that my first thought wasn't, oh shit, don't fold and let's not hit nine. You know what I mean? It was that almost seemed to completely go because I thought, no, not under this manager. Optimism. I think just the fact that literally anything was better than what we had before. We were only heading in one direction and change was necessary. This guy is intricate with his detail, his analysis, his presentations that he gives his players, all of this stuff. He doesn't leave a stone unturned. He will work harder than anyone because also he's grateful for the opportunity. You hear the likes of Bournemouth being linked with Bielsa. You know, we could have got in a name. We could have got someone in who's managed four different clubs in the Premier League. Could have got in a Rafa Benitez, for example, who at the end of the day, if Saints got relegated, they would leave, take their money, and probably wouldn't give that much of a shit. Whereas Nathan Jones, for him, it's our opportunity to stay in the league, but it's also potentially his only opportunity to make himself a Premier League, a top Premier League manager. Because if he comes up, goes like he's gone to Stoke and it didn't go well, then he leaves Luton, comes to Saints, we get relegated, he doesn't do well, then suddenly it's, well, we can't really manage anywhere outside of Luton, which is probably where he would then end up going back. So I think there's a lot on the line for him. And what we will have is someone that fights to the death right to the end of the season. And I'm hoping that he'll get that from the young players at Saints as well, because it certainly looked like that at the beginning of the game and the beginning of the second half. And he definitely got that from his players at Luton. And I think our group of players are very different to the group that he took on at Stoke. I think there's much more of a comparison to his Luton team, which he's alluded to. So I'm optimistic as well. And I'm just looking forward more to watching Saints, because I know we're past that kind of drab period of knowing what's coming and it not being particularly inspiring.
Yeah, it's nice to go into games sort of even slightly optimistic that the team are going to perform, rather than thinking, well, once we go 1-0 down, that's it. And I think a final point I just want to make about Nathan Jones is it's obvious that he had quite the project, quite the journey with Luton, and it would take something quite special to get him away from that. So he obviously has bought completely into the project that Sport Republic has sold him, because, you know, he's leaving essentially his family at Luton. He's gone from them, he's come back. Even when Luton fans weren't necessarily too happy with him coming back, considering he jumped ship to Stoke. But if he's managed to win them back round, make them competitive with one of the smallest budgets in the Championship, make them one of the sort of the playoff hunters, as it were. So it would have taken something quite special to take him away from that. So for him to come to Saints and be completely bought into it makes me excited that, you know, he's ready for the challenge. And I'm looking forward to the World Cup, but I'm going to also be looking forward to that first game for Saints back and seeing these ideas implemented and what that means, how that translates onto the pitch.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the podcast that talks all things football, all things Saints. We will be doing shortly another episode based on the World Cup. It's Thursday evening as we're recording this one, so only a few days until it all kicks off in Qatar. Not many people seem to have World Cup fever yet, but I certainly have. And I think once it kicks off, especially on Monday afternoon when England play Iran, it will be all systems go on the international front, even if it is in the middle of winter or early winter. As for Saints, like you said, back against Lincoln and then the first game at home to Brighton's Boxing Day. And hopefully we'll see a Nathan Jones side ahead of that January transfer window and a good run of fixtures. If you want to comment or let us know your opinion on the podcast, you can find the podcast on Twitter at _Saints. Alternatively, you can speak to me at CallumWilson21.
And if you feel like speaking to me, I'm at T214Murray. Thank you very much for listening. And as always, stay safe. Stay wonderful.